Welcome to The Life of Letters, a podcast exploring the history and future of calligraphy, handwriting, type design, and all things lettering. Join me, Laura Edrelin, a London-based calligrapher, as I connect with artists, historians, stationery experts, and more from around the world to uncover the stories behind the letters and the journeys of those who bring them to life. I'm delighted to be speaking with traditional sign writer and gold leaf specialist Liane Barker in today's episode. Liane is a pioneering sign writer with 43 years of trade experience, continuing the business at Barker Signs that her father, Maurie Barker, established in 1964. She became one of Australia's few female sign writing apprentices in the 1980s, and her exceptional skill earned her Queensland's Top Apprentice Award, which is a remarkable achievement in a male-dominated industry. Recognising a resurgence in interest for the traditional craft of sign writing, Liane now offers online and in-person workshops locally and internationally, connecting students globally. In 2024, Barker Signs proudly celebrated its 60th anniversary, honouring a legacy of traditional sign writing and gold leaf craftsmanship. Wow. Liane, it's like having royalty on the show. A huge welcome to the Life of Letters podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Laura. That was I feel very honoured. Such a lovely intro.
It's lovely to have so much to explore. So I'm really, really excited. For this episode, I really wanted to start at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about how Barker Signs began?
My dad started the sign writing business in 1964. A little bit of a background, he's actually English. So he was a draftsman for the Austin Motor Company in Birmingham when he was like 17, 18. Started his, I guess, journeyman or apprenticeship back then. And so he would actually be under the guidance of the head draftsman who would actually design all of the dealerships for around the world for selling the Austin Motor Company car. So he was fascinated how this guy would hand draw all the signage because everything was hand done, like there was no computers around to be able to do it. So he really found his love of letters in following what this guy was doing. So it wasn't until he then migrated to Australia with my mum and her parents. I think it was 1950. They caught the boat over and he started working for different jobs. And it wasn't until about 1960 that he really had this yearning that he wanted to do more in lettering. By that stage, he was working for a foundry where he was a pattern maker. So that's where they would make the timber mouldings, which then would go to the casting shop to make the metal castings for particular machines and things. And he also was carving lettering for the brass plaques that they used to pour. So, again, his love of letters was coming through. So in 1960, I was born in 1960, so he, you know, was a young dad with two little girls. And so I guess he just decided that he was going to have a go and start his own business. Now, he had no formal training. So in those days, it was very much taboo to start to be a sign writer or to do any trade without having done the formal education or an apprenticeship. He literally self-taught himself. He bought lots and lots of books, and I'm very lucky to actually own a lot of his original books that he self-taught himself with. One of them I've got, and I tell a lot of my students, it was published in 1896, and in it, it shows you how to make a reflector for your candle so you can sign right at night. So it's just amazing. Like, our trade is a very old trade. So basically he threw his full-time job in with mum's blessing and walked the streets of the hometown that they were living in at the time here in Australia and just door knocked until somebody believed in him enough to give him his break, I suppose. So he actually he was very lucky. His first contract was like with an ice cream company, signwriting all of their trucks.
Oh, wow.
So then the sad thing is that the signwriters in the town who were formally trained would tear him down. So they would say to people, you know, don't go to him. He's just a backyarder. He doesn't know what he's doing. And in a way, it worked in his favor because some people were like, well, blow that. If you're going to be that nasty, we'll go with him anyway. So he built his shed in the backyard, which is a very typical Australian way of doing sign writing. And most sign writers would have a shed in the backyard and they work out of. So he built it out of scraps from old houses that a mate of his used to pull down. And so he was able to rummage through and get some materials to build this his first sign shop in the backyard. So my earliest recollection, I can vaguely remember, but he started his business in 1964. So by that stage, I was 4 years old and I was his best mate. I used to just always spend my every waking moment with him. We'd go for long walks and I'd spend time just down in the shed with him. And it was funny, he tells the story of when they finally got a phone, because back then too, like just normal landline telephones weren't common. But because he had a business, he had to have a phone. So yeah, so from sort of very humble beginnings, he then actually got a contract with the Royal Australian Air Force. And so that really gave him, I guess, a leg up to keep the business going. And he was just a very hard worker. And I was only talking to him yesterday. He's 93 now and he's in a nursing home. But he was, he was saying that he'd take a job and then he'd go home and he'd be like, oh, my God, I don't know how to do that. How do I do that? You know, he'd say to the client, yeah, I can do that. And then go, how do I do that? You know, and he'd read books and basically self-taught, teach himself. So, you know, sign writing is very much about being self-taught these days. There's not a lot of formal training. And so I want people to know that don't ever feel bad that you don't have that piece of paper. Just have the passion and you'll do well.
That's so lovely and so relatable to so many people. I think it's really easy, especially when there's already a fear around starting your own business or doing something because you love doing it. We're now in Australia still, but it's the 1980s. What made you want to kind of become a sign writer and take up an apprenticeship?
It's funny, actually, because I used to go out with Dad when I was at school. So I'd go out on jobs with him on the school holidays. I'd spend every waking moment down in the shed when I was older. I never did any homework from school. I'd dump my bags and I'd be down in the shed and I'd be organizing all of his paint tins and everything like that. So it was, you'd think that it would be a natural transition that I would just go straight into it, but I didn't, because I've always loved traveling, and which I still do. So I was just like, no, I just want to get out of my hometown, because, you know, it was a small country town and very, very backward in its thinking, I suppose. So I actually left school and got a job working in an office because I hated school. I wasn't a very good student. I never did any work. So my parents allowed me to go for an interview and I actually got this job. So I worked for a few years just as a typist in an office and then I went traveling. And it was while I was traveling that I was asked by one of the hostels I was staying in if I could sign write a sign, because I was saying that my dad was a sign writer and I used to, you know, help him. And so they were like, oh, great. So I rang Dad and he sent up some brushes to me. It was in Cairns in the north, far north Queensland. And I did this sign and it is horrendous. I can't find a photo of it. I did have it. I don't know where it's gone, but it was shocking. And I'm sure my father was horrified at what I'd done. But they all thought it was amazing and I thought I was pretty cool. So I did that and then I continued to travel and I actually ran out of money. So I rang Dad and said, can you bail me out? Can you send me some money to get back home? I was only traveling within Australia. It wasn't overseas. So he did, and I got home. And he just was really busy. And he said, look, you know, I'd really, would you like to give me a hand? I was like, oh, I don't want to be stuck in this town. I hate it.
Yeah.
So his hook for me was, well, if you do your apprenticeship, you can always travel with it as a sign writer. There's always work. And that was the hook that got me, because it was the travel. So I guess my ethos, or my thing that I go by from now on, has been training that takes you places. And it's true. It's taken me all over the world, you know, with sign writing, and being able to teach it now, but also to just go and subcontract or work for people, or, you know, just go and help people if they need a hand. Yeah.
Yes.
So it really is a very much a great nomadic life as a sign writer. Yeah.
I love that phrase, training that takes you places. I think that's brilliant. And what was it like at this time? Because you were in an industry which very few women were a part of, right?
It's interesting, because from what we knew, I mean, we didn't have the internet back then. So, like, you were really only in your own bubble or within your own little area. So we really didn't know who was out there or what was doing. But as far as I knew, I think I was probably about one of four, maybe in Queensland, in my home state. There was a few female sign writers down south in New South Wales and Victoria. But it's interesting, because there is an article coming out in the Blag magazine for celebrating the letterhead's 50th anniversary, which Meredith Caspian has actually written. And she's found some really interesting articles about women in signage, you know, dating back to the 1800s. And the fact that when men went off to war in the Civil War, you know, there was, women had to step up. There was jobs that had to be filled, and sign writing was actually one of them. So it's really an interesting history that we just don't know a lot about. I've only just found that link this morning, so I'm looking forward to reading up more about it.
Yes. Fresh off the press, yeah.
Fresh off the press.
Yeah. That's great. I bet there's a huge amount of stories and history there that are maybe uncovered so far, but that would be really interesting.
Sadly, it's still been, like in a lot of industries, you know, you're a woman, so therefore kind of objectified a little bit, or you're, you know, considered that you're not as strong as the men or capable as a man is in the job. And there was a lot of that in the 80s when I first started. I was probably very lucky in the sense that I was, you know, I could do my apprenticeship with my dad. So I was given kind of free rein to learn at an early stage. You know, as an apprenticeship, you know, usually your first year you sweep floors and clean toilets. You'd never pick up a brush. I was gilding in my first year of sign writing, because he'd basically say, yeah, you can do it, just have a go. And I'd be like, I don't know how to do it. He goes, just, you know, what's the worst that can happen? So I was very lucky, because he always had a lot of faith in me. But I do remember going to a lot of sign writing meetings. So he was president of the Sign Association at the time back then. So we would go to a lot of meetings and conferences and get-togethers, which was great. And, you know, but there was, I remember at one dinner I was at, some old guy I was sitting across the table from, and I was in my 20s. I would have been about 23 at the time. And he was just like, oh, women in the sign industry, you know, they can't do the work that we can do. And he said, you know, if you had to go out and do a job with 16-foot steel trestles, you wouldn't be able to do it. And I looked at him and I just went, hang on a minute, can you lift 16-foot steel trestles? They're very heavy. They're ridiculously heavy. And by the way, why would I break my body doing something like that, when if you work smarter, you would actually get the job done easier, you know? So he was sort of like, oh, and then it turned out that no, he couldn't lift 16-foot trestles on his own, and why would you? So there was kind of a lot of that attitude. You really had to prove yourself. You were constantly, it was funny, because in the 80s, I started my first business at about 24 when I finished my apprenticeship. And it was in an even smaller town than when I was, the one I was in. Circumstances had just turned out that I ended up in this town. And every job I got for the first couple of months were massive jobs with scaffolding and up high and, you know, all that sort of thing. But the guy that I was going out with at the time, his father worked at a private boys' school. So I would actually go in on a Friday afternoon and say to the year 12 boys, who wants to earn some money this weekend? I need help to put some scaffolding up. So, you know, like it's being resourceful as a woman, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Like you just learn to work smarter. I would get clients ringing me. You know, I'd have somebody ring up on the phone because mobile phones weren't around back then. And they go, it's the boss, you know, it's the boss in. And I would say, oh, they're not in at the moment. But if you leave your number, I'll get them to ring you back. And then wait about half an hour. And then I'd ring them and they'd go, oh, you're a girl. And I'd go, yep, that's me. You know, so it just, I kind of played the game because you had to. And it was very much in those days, you didn't want to rock the boat or get them too upset or, you know, you had to, learn to take a joke or whatever, you know. And I'd be asked constantly, oh, why don't you wear short shorts? And that whole objectifying thing is really annoying. And I guess I used to get a bit frustrated. You know, I'd get really sort of indignant and go, you know, it's not about what I look like. It's about what I'm capable of sort of thing.
Yeah, of course.
So I basically fell into my first business by just, again, getting work, walking the streets, talking to people. And it's interesting because, you know, most people will go back then too, because it was all hand done. There was no computers around in those days. So it was, you know, everything was done by hand. And so you'd say you're a sign writer and people would just be, oh my God, you know, this is my, I've got a sign I need done. And you'd be sign writing a shop and then you'd have somebody tap you on the shoulder and go, oh, when you finish there, can you come down and see me down the road? So there was always plenty of work around, so that was kind of the early days. And then I was offered a position to manage a sign shop in Brisbane, which is the capital city of my state, home state Queensland, and that was at 28, and that was dealing with big corporate clients. And by that stage, the computers had started to come into the sign industry, and the company that I worked for actually sold the first lot of vinyl cutters that cut lettering out, cut the stickers out. So it was very much a baptism of fire because you'd come from a pure hand-crafted, hand-drawn background coming into having to learn computers, which none of us knew how to do. It was really, what's this button do? Oh, is that what it does? You know,
so self-taught
ourselves, you know,
right,
Corel
in the deep
and
end.
Adobe and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Incredible. And actually that segues really nicely because I wanted to ask you to just explain a little bit about the differences between the traditional sign writing and more modern approaches. No particular approaches that have, it's just starting to get lost, or maybe are they coming back?
Sadly, when the computers hit the industry, so it would have been as I finished my apprenticeship is when the first vinyl cutters started to come into Australia. So that would have been about 1982, 83. My dad actually bought one of the very first vinyl cutters, which was a Gerber machine, and it would cut lettering, and it was really slow, like compared to what is out there now. But I remember we were just mesmerized by, like, oh my God, like, look how quickly it cuts a letter in comparison to actually hand painting a letter. I'm quite vocal actually about the computers in the sense that they're really a tool. I'm not against them. I'm not against computers in the industry because, yes, hand painting signs is great and hand drawing all your layouts is fantastic. But if you're going to spend 20 hours designing something, you're not going to make a lot of money, because people aren't going to pay you for that. So, you know, we do all still use computers to design stuff. What I tend to do is I might design something in Illustrator, and then I will print that out, and then I'll draw back into it and give it that sort of, because I find computer fonts, I hate computer fonts, because they don't do the spacing correctly, and they're just very stilted. Whereas, you know, with hand-painted stuff, you do get that flow and that design, sort of easy design with them. So, but again, they're a tool. You don't see a builder on a building site using an old handsaw. They use the latest equipment. So what I the sad thing for me is that in the early 80s, all of the old sign writers turned their back on the computer and said, this is not sign writing. You know, it's not the real thing. It's not, we're not doing it by hand anymore, which allowed people who weren't qualified at all in any form of design, layout, lettering, color theory, nothing, to buy a computer and suddenly call themselves a sign writer. Mm-hmm. So companies were buying, like big companies were buying all of the, so it started with vinyl cut lettering, which was self-adhesive, and then it moved into the digital, where it's all digitally printed, and now you've got LED lights and all of that now. But so bigger companies had no idea about signage. They had no clue. So then they were employing graphic designers, which is great because it meant that there was another opening for that industry. But graphic designers were designing things and had no idea how that translated. It looked great on paper and it may look good on a computer screen, but it not necessarily would translate to the side of a building on the side of a car when the car is speeding past you at 80 kilometres an hour. So there's been a huge shift and, you know, it's very sad. And I think that's why the movement of letterheads and also Birds of the Brush, and there's all different, you know, groups that are bringing back and keeping that craft alive, basically teaching people that there is actually rules and the right way to be able to create signage. So let's learn that. And that's what I teach too. So when I'm teaching, it's all about, you know, basically, you know, sign writing is it's probably 80% design and layout, and the other 20% is actual, you know, talent and the actual technical side of it. Yeah. So I think had we been able to embrace and kept the computer, we would have kept our industry a little bit more secure for us, and it wouldn't have been. But now it has come around again. When I, so 80s, 90s, by the time the 90s had come, it was all digital. So it was all digital printing, which I had. So I had a business with staff and I had digital printing machines. And it was, again, it was my own business. It wasn't Barker Signs. Dad was still doing his business. So I'd gone to Brisbane and then I'd moved back to my hometown and I'd started my own business because I had got married by then and I'd had a child as well. So I wanted to do my own thing. And it was a digital printing business, but when I designed, I would design like a sign writer. So I would still design as though I was putting paint to a surface with, you know, lettering that had outlines and shades, blended shades and panels and everything that you would normally do with a brush, I would do with the computer. So you can see when you drive around, you can actually see a sign-trained person who has computer equipment as opposed to, you know, a person that has just opened up and gone, oh, that 20,000 fonts looks great on a piece of, you know, tin. And it looks like somebody's thrown up over it with, you know, a multitude of colours. So,
I mean, it's incredible because really you're blending these two methods together, aren't you? There's the traditional kind of original craft of sign writing and then bringing that into a world where there are digital technologies that can support that, maybe make the whole process faster, maybe make the business work quicker and get more clients or more work. So it's only building the success of it, and hopefully along the way you're kind of still bringing those people through when you're then teaching that, you're rolling that out.
Sadly, the client doesn't know about hand-painted signs because it's been like probably 40 years now that, you know, that digital and computer technology has been in the industry. So the client has no idea what a hand-painted sign is, what its effect is, how beautiful it can look. And on a side note, sadly, digital and all of the computer-generated signage is very bad for the environment. So with a hand-painted sign, my carbon footprint is a very small couple of pots of paint, which when dried out and hardened and skinned over is less likely to leach into the environment, as opposed to an entire skip filled with the backing sheets and the plastics that is at the outtakes of the digital printed signage that cannot be recycled because it's all wax paper plastics that cannot be recycled, and it is literally dumped into landfill. And you think of the thousands and thousands of sign shops around the world now that are producing, again, a skip a week of this rubbish. It's quite frightening. And I think this is why a lot of people, there is a movement towards, in all industries too. I think, you know, particularly in the UK, you've got the King, you know, continuing the grants and that for the heritage crafts, and they're actually honouring people who do amazing things, you know, with their hands and these traditional skills. And I think it's fantastic that particularly over there, and that's why I love coming to the UK, because I just feel like you're honoured and you're heard. Whereas over here it is still very much cheap and cheerful. You know, they just want a quick sticker sign. They don't care how long it lasts. And look, it won't last. That whole sign is then torn off the building and put into landfill. So it's really about educating the client into what the alternatives are, because they just don't know. And when you do tell them, they're like, oh, well, because people go, oh, hand painting's really expensive. Actually, it's not. In the long run, it's actually an investment. So, and particularly gold leaf. Gold leaf is an incredible investment for your business, and it's beautiful.
Oh, I've seen some of your gold leaf work. It's incredible. And in terms of the craft itself, in terms of kind of scaling, so maybe you've got hundreds of them, but what's the sort of largest sign that you've worked on, can you think?
When I was an apprentice, and when I managed the sign shop in Brisbane, I moved back to Toowoomba and I went into partnership with my dad. So I was actually working with him in Barker Signs for about 4 or 5 years before I got married and then went back out into my own. So when I moved back with him, we did a lot of massive work, and we were doing silos, so wheat silos, which are high, very high off the ground, to the point where, and in those days too, it was a little bit before workplace health and safety was very strict, and we would be in a bucket off a crane, just dangling off the end of a crane jib, and the dogman who, you know, gives the instructions down to the crane driver, he couldn't see the driver, like they are talking by walkie-talkie, as to, like, can you just move it just a little bit to the left? Yep, no, that's great. Yep, no, mate, that's good. You know, and we're just like swinging on the end of the crane in a bucket, and we would take the front of the bucket out because, you know, you needed access to the area that you were going to paint, and there was no harnesses or anything in those days. It was, you know, one step forward, you would have just fallen to your death. But I think you kind of knew that you just had to be quite aware of what you did. I think the lettering was probably, you know, 4 meters high in the letters alone on the side of the shed. So, so I've done that right down to very small honour boards, which is like 12 mil high lettering and gilding that. So the great thing with signwriting is you really never know what your work is going to be from 1 week to the next. You know, you might be gilding a vintage timber speedboat 1 week, and then you might be signwriting a window, or you might be doing honour boards, or, you know, next week I'm gilding a frame for a mirror, you know, so I do a lot of interior gilding as well as sign writing. So
wow. Is an honor board where they've got like the names of people?
In schools and things, you know, and in it's where they honor, you know, usually school captains or whatever, like Eton and places like that. They have all so they have them here in Australia, and a lot of them are done in vinyl, in stickers. But I'm doing a job in a couple of weeks' time to update some honour boards, because they haven't had the names updated since 2014. So it's a huge job updating. Yeah, yeah. And I love that sort of work. And it's all hand painted. It's all, 12 mil high lettering, very small letters. Sign writing them, and then you gild them with the transcript.
Is this with a gold leaf? So being a gold leaf specialist must mean that you're handling incredibly fine, expensive details. Like, my knowledge here is limited to kind of Instagram videos. My mum is an artist too, so she used to apply gold leaf to her own artwork in our kitchen, and I just remember trying not to breathe or sneeze especially when she's brushing the excess away, and I think, oh god, how much gold is that she's brushing away? Is there anything particular that you love about working with gold and that fineness of gold leaf?
It's funny, I have a love-hate relationship with gold leaf.
I bet.
I love it, but boy, sometimes I could murder it. Because for that reason, it is a very organic material. And also, back in the day, it used to be hand-beaten. So, you know, sadly, it's gone through into machines now. I mean, side note, I was very lucky to run a glass gilding workshop in Florence last year, and it was in association with Gusto Magnetti gold leaf factory in Florence, where we got to visit the factory and see how the gold leaf is made, from an ingot right down to the book of where the very fine leaf is inserted in between tissue paper. There are imperfections in the gold, particularly some of the cheaper grades of the gold, you'll find there'll be imperfections in, which is a bit annoying when you're in the middle of doing a glass sign. If you know, there might be a hair or something that's happened. So I only ever use very expensive Italian or German gold leaf these days, because it is of a very high quality, but it is very expensive. But at the same time, gold leaf is indestructible. So a gilded glass sign will last centuries. You'll find the beautiful Italian gold leaf signs that you see on the front of the buildings, and that they've been there for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. The paint may have cracked up around, but usually the gold is actually still intact. So yes, the gold is a bit tricky to move, particularly if you're doing a window and somebody opens the door on you, sticks their head in to see what's happening, or you're in the middle of doing a job where the company, the shop is actually operational, so they've got customers coming in and out. It's always a bit hairy when you've got a whole book of 25 leaves of, 23 karat gold, and the door opens and the wind grabs it, and so a whole book gets flies out the door. But it's a technique, and it's something that you really need to be doing a lot of. There's a lot of people that do a lot of gilding out there, but there are some people who do an amazing gilding. Like, I mean, I say I'm a gold leaf specialist, but there are people who are far better in gilding than I am, like Dave Smith, for a start. He is the god, as far as I'm concerned. And also Robert Fries in Chicago, and Sean Felix, they are incredible gilders. The same in England. I always joke and say, if you stand still long enough, they'll gild you in England, particularly in London, because there's just, everywhere you look, your cathedrals are gilded, and your the fence posts are gilded, and it's everywhere. Whereas here in Australia, we're very much a very young country, and sadly in the city, Brisbane, that I live in, our council doesn't value anything that's old, and they tear it down and they replace it with something modern and something that doesn't last. So don't do the white vinyl sticker on the window. Spend a little bit more money and have something.
Yeah, and it's going to last longer as well. Yeah, be proud of it. And so can you tell us, like, one or two of your favorite projects that you've worked on over the years? I know that's many to flick through.
One of the best jobs I think I've done probably in the last 5 years was when I came to the UK in 2019. I contacted Paul Banks, and he is an incredible gold leaf sign writer artist who does a lot of tattoo shops, and you'll see his work. If you Google him, you'll see the incredible work that he does. And I just had met him through Instagram, and I messaged him and said, I think you're amazing. I would love to come and hold your ladder and make coffee for you, but just be in your presence because, you know. And I didn't hear back from him, so I was like, that's okay. I was in London and he actually messaged me and said, I'm sorry, I've been on holidays. No, you're not coming to hold my ladder. You're coming to give me a hand with the job. And I was completely blown away. It was just, I was like a kid in a candy shop. I was like, oh, my God. So I spent 2 days up in Sheffield helping him on a massive tattoo window. And, like, he just sort of threw me in the deep end and said, yes, well, you do this door and I'll do this bit. And so we spent 2 days working together on this incredible window. And at the end of it, it was really lovely because, again, I didn't know him that well, but he had followed what I was doing. And at the end of it, he just said that I was one of the best journeymen, you know, sign writers that he had worked with. So I remember getting in the train and catching the train back to London. I think I was sobbing the whole way back, you know, because it was just the most incredible experience.
Wow.
I've been lucky enough to work with some of the most amazing sign writers in the UK and in the States, but, you know, so basically I work in return for board and lodging, so I kind of go and I'll help people. I worked with Ginny Marlowe from, she's in near Bath, and she does all the canal boats, and I've always wanted to sign ride a canal boat. So I was very lucky last year to actually work with her for a week and help her sign ride some canal boats because she does some amazing stuff. So I've really connected with a lot of people around the world, and so I guess I can't really say there's been a lot of jobs that I've done, but there's been a lot of standout stuff that I've just helped other people with, which I really love doing.
Which is a great kind of example when you're teaching others to know that there are other people out there to connect with, all these amazing experiences, but you have to go and ask for them, right? You know, yes, you had these experiences and you know, they got you involved in things, but it was off your own ability to be able to reach out to them and say, hey, I love what you're doing, let's connect. And I love that kind of community over competition idea, you know, that comes up so often. And obviously you've just launched a new course. This is opening up this huge traditional craft to lots more people. Can you tell us a little bit about the course and how you teach?
Yeah, well, I'm still working on it, and it's terrible because I've been saying for the last, you know, probably 18 months, yes, it's almost finished. But there's a lot, my problem is like us all artists, and, you know, you yourself are probably the same, you know, you're always worried it's not good enough and it's got to be so much better before you actually start it. And everyone sort of says to you, just get it out there. But, you know, it's really hard to do that. I started teaching probably about, it was after I was invited to do, be part of the all-female signwriting exhibition in Chicago in 2017. And I met a lot of female signwriters back then who were killing it in the industry. And it gave me the confidence to say, well, I think I can actually teach this, you know, talking to people and connecting with, you know, people that I didn't even know existed and didn't realize that signwriting was such a huge movement happening overseas, more so than here. So I came back and I started just doing face-to-face little weekend workshops. So, and again, you know, teaching, talking, working with people, sharing ideas. So then when COVID hit, my daughter actually suggested that I go online and teach online, you know, again, thrown in the deep end to learn Zoom. And I just put what I would teach in a weekend, I put up as a 6-week course, and it was an hour and a half each week via Zoom. And I was literally, I was in my studio with my mull stick and my pot of paint and my brush. And I would have 8 students on the screen via Zoom, and they were in their little lockdown because I had a captive audience at that stage, and a lot of them were, most of my students were from the States or from the UK and Europe. And for an hour and a half, they'd watch me you know, demonstrate how to do strokes, and then I'd watch them through the screen, which was absolutely phenomenal. You know, it's amazing what technology can do and how you can utilize it to reach a wider audience. I've had quite a few success stories of a couple of people who are really killing it in the industry and doing incredibly well after doing a workshop with me, which is really lovely to see. So then I started to look at, well, how could I do it in a different way? And that's where Mastering the Art of Sign Writing kind of morphed. I've only managed to get one unit up, which is Mastering the Art of Brush Skills, which I've done very well with and a lot of people have bought and got on. And it is the foundations. And I say to anyone, you know, once you know how to use a brush, you can sign write anything. Once you understand that, it's really down to you to then just do practice and you know, paint letters and, you know, print off something off the computer and, you know, mark it out and paint. And the more you do, it's a bit like riding a bike, because sign writing is a muscle memory. I actually hadn't picked a brush up in probably 15, 20 years because we all went digital, and I had been trained formally purely by brush. And I picked the brush up at a workshop, and I was rubbish. It was awful. I was ready to throw the towel in completely. But by the third day, I had actually gone, oh, actually, I can do this. It's amazing. Mm. So it's just like it comes back to you. So the brush skills is the first unit. I say to people, I could write a book on how not to be a sign writer or how not to run a business, because I think
you should do that.
All the mistakes in the world, having had a very big digital printing business in the 90s, and staff and overheads and being a single mother and bringing up a daughter as well, it was a very hard time. It's one of the things that business is, you know, the business side of sign writing is just as important as the craft side of it. If you are going to make a living out of it, I
mean, yeah.
You know, if you want it as a hobby, great, you know, there's plenty to do. And there's lots of workshops out there. Like, I'm not the only one that runs workshops. There are lots and lots of people running workshops now. And I say to all of my students who do mine, go and do as many as you can, because we all teach a little bit differently. I teach what I was taught back in the 80s. You know, and that's why I like traveling and working with people, because when I go and work with somebody, they're learning off me, but I'm learning just as much off them, because they've learned new techniques or they've learned new shortcuts that I would never have thought of. And, you know, it's just that, it's that sharing of ideas and, again, that community.
Yeah. I love that. And I think the more we can learn and share together, the more we then impart that to other people in their signs.
Well, I say I am very grateful to my dad. He worked right up until he was like late 80s. You know, he was still pottering around as Barker Signs. So I couldn't actually take over the business name, because he had it already registered to himself. When he finally decided to hang up his computer and his little bit of brushes that he'd used, I then was able to take over Barker Signs and continue it. So, and as I said, I'm extremely grateful to him to have given me the opportunity to learn this trade, because there's been a lot of women, and I get a lot of people, you know, all the world over will say, oh, I really wanted to do sign writing, or, you know, but they wouldn't let me, you know, nobody would put me on, or nobody would give me the chance. And so, you know, I realized that I was very lucky that, you know, I kind of fell into it. He's 93 and in a nursing home, and, you know, we constantly talk quite regularly, and he's always, you know, what job are you working on? I'll come and help you. You know, he can't walk. He's in a wheelchair now. And I just go, yeah, no problem. I'll come pick you up. You know, lazing around in that bed all day, you know, come out, start slinging some paint with me. But yes, I, you know, the fact that he is still around, and the fact that, you know, there's a little bit of information or a bit of interest in the fact that he was also, you know, the OG of Barker Signs, I think is, you know, a bit of a thrill for him. And it's important for me that he is recognised as well, not just me. So, yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's so lovely. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I actually feel so inspired by your story and this sort of incredible career that you've had and continue to have, and how you're bringing all of this back and enabling so many more people to learn this beautiful art form, but also continuing the legacy of your father. I think that is just such a lovely full circle. But honestly, thank you so much.
If anyone's interested, I am coming back to the UK and there will be some workshops announced. I'm hoping to have a 4-day gilding retreat, which will have some guest artists who will come along as well, so it won't just be me. I'm also looking at doing another glass gilding workshop, which will be in the north of England.
Yes, so to find out more about Liane, visit barkersigns.com, or you can connect with her on Instagram at @Barker_signs and at @MasteringTheArtOfSignWriting. But all the links will be in today's episode show notes, so no one has to remember all of that. Thank you so much for joining me for The Life of Letters. It's been brilliant talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura. It was lovely to meet you, and it's really great that there is an interest in what
we all do.
So Thank you for keeping
that alive.
Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe, leave a review, or share it with a fellow lettering enthusiast. And for all the details to connect with us, check out the show notes. A huge thank you to my producer, Heidi Cullop, for ensuring this podcast reached your ears. And finally, to all the guests featured in this series, go check them out.